Alright, time once again for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Brought to you by... Yeah, sorry, I wish. So little success in motivating people and creating any kind of momentum. In terms of philosophical concept. Okay, so it's a religion that's really hard to sell. All right, you could argue. But who wants to classify anything as a religion? But that's all that people really buy, is some kind of narrative that has a bunch of wooey crap in it. Oh, I should pause for a moment. I had the wrong logo up there, so yeah, I had to fix that. Oh, it's so important. So another conversation about my failure to communicate what really is just, you know, it's just a pretty simple description of the circumstance, you know, our physical circumstance. It is, in fact, a bug planet. We are the fanciest bugs in the sense that we have these extra features, senses, I don't know if it's the right word to use, capacities. All right, so we can add numbers, we can do some logic, you know, I guess, reasoning. Is that what people do? No, they really don't. We can juggle things called ideas. Whether we juggle them well or not, I guess that would be the, you know, a separate conversation. But the other organisms have no chance. They can't conceptualize the world into vocabulary and organize it. And so they're just reacting to stuff as if, I've used the example of Helen Keller. They're stuck in the Helen Keller without a language. And, you know, in this, you know, very insular, isolated, and you just react to what your senses can, you know, hit upon. So it reduced her capacity, okay, to understand the world she was interacting in, to better predict it, let's say. She certainly could predict things. She certainly knew, you know, what time of day it was. I mean, she could tell when the sun was hitting her and when it wasn't, you know, different things. So that's the world most of the animals are in, is a world of a kind of blind, you know, deaf, moot, just kind of rough to play the game from such a, an unknowledgeable position. And they're just moving pieces, you know, and they're not playing chess, you know. And we can do the, you know, better job of recognizing the bigger context of our existence. So, you know, for, you know, 2 decades now, I've been talking about, you know, it's like a maze. You know, you can be wandering through the maze, or you can climb up the wall of the maze and see the maze and then be able to navigate much more coherently, to see where the dead ends are and to understand the traps and the pitfalls and where, you know, there's nothing but potential mistake to make. So, I guess that's partially how we go through our lives, and there's so little emphasis placed on that importance. You know, that's, you have give a hoot, don't pollute, and you have Smokey the Bear, and you have, you know, these different little things that you try to encourage people to recognize it's not nice to be an asshole. But there's not much promoting the idea that every day is opportunity, and you know, every hour is to be wasted or to be maximized in terms of even for your own sake, even in planning your own life, it's nothing but sensible to do it carefully. This is a game that is serious, and kids really aren't taught that, you know, this is a serious game. I mean, you're going to interact in this arena with all of this other stuff, and there's all kinds of ways to play badly, and to make a mess. You know, this is the truth. I mean, I would have really liked if, you know, I didn't have to, you know, if these things didn't have to occur to me, that somebody would have just told me and expedited this whole process of gaining some distance from just simply living to thinking about living. And, you know, the little things like, you know, when I point out that if you marry somebody, you've changed the destiny of the person she would have married. You know, and a whole bunch of other destinies have now been completely changed, you know, because of a choice you make. And like vice versa, that happens to you. You know, and it's something to be aware of and conscious of, that all, every one of these decisions is going to have implications. Now, you know, there's things like, you know, I smoke cigarettes. Started when I was about 11. I enjoy, you know, I like, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I got addicted really quick. It's not even that I say I could like them so much, but it's I needed them quickly. I was quickly dependent on, and it probably is because I was kind of an anxious person, and, you know, I was always unsettled and didn't feel quite right. And so anything that would throw you off, you know, like a little bit of withdrawal from not having your drug, just exacerbated, yeah, that's a good one, the problem of, you know, me having a bad day. And so it became a regulatory thing. But, yeah, I mean, I had the knowledge that, gee, this is, you know, there's no good. There's no, you know, this isn't opening doors. This you know, this is opening trap doors. And you're just, you know, and there's so little capacity, you know, I have to acknowledge, when I was that young, to really grok, you know, what's at stake and how bad it can get and all of that stuff. And that has to ease into your brain little pieces at a time. You know, so you make a few trips to a nursing home, or you see some other crap, and you get some idea that, well, I sure as fuck don't want to end up like that. And, you know, and you, then you find out that these people didn't make any big mistakes, you know, and this is what happened to them. You know, they were careful, and their life turned to shit. And so, you know, it's a serious business. And I don't... And it's really hard, though, to get people who are caught up playing to take it seriously. And they're the people that need to take it the most serious, right? I don't know if that, you know, I guess it doesn't make any difference. Everybody's got to take it seriously. But I guess the people who are more aggressive in how they're living obviously need to be more aware of the implications of, you know, how what they're doing is going to fuck up somebody else and all that kind of crap. And I guess in some ways I live such a passive existence. You know, it's almost like you don't have to do much thinking, you know, just because you don't do much interfering. You know, you're just playing in your own dirt, and, you know, there's not too much trouble you can get into in terms of implications that will affect somebody else. Something you have to be mindful of. So anyway, so that's a simple statement that ends up being a complicated statement, in the sense of saying, look, it's a simple argument that we got here through evolution, and evolution just makes these things, these machines, and it really is kind of unfair and cheating to pretend that you can put these machines in all these different little categories and say that it's all some sort of different thing. It's just a survival machine, and we're all in that category. And yes, some of them have different attributes and features, but the basic function is the same. And certainly for the mammals, we have so much in common in terms of the basic construction that it's a bit, again, ridiculous to, you know, make some argument that the existence is significantly different, when no, it's more same than it is different, and same in the important aspects where the, you know, little puppy dogs and such have an active real stake in their life. They're experiencing it. You can see their, you know, their happiness and their sadness, and you know, they're experiencing their life as, you know, a consciousness being being played with by physiology and neurology in, you know, this kind of insidious way to get it to perform in a certain way and do certain things. You know, all of it is pretty archaic to somebody who's something, some creature like us, you know, who is grown out of playing this really stupid evolutionary game of, you know, fight and flight and stealing and, you know, getting food and doing all this stuff that's going to force you to, you know, in all likelihood, trample on a lot of stuff, cause a lot of grief and suffering. And, you know, we... enlightened humans, you have to be enlightened to be able to figure out that causing less grief and suffering is a good thing. You know, it sort of makes you better in terms of your functionality if you're not causing pain and suffering to be experienced, or less of it. You're minimizing it. But you can't eliminate it, and you can't escape that you're, you know, you're just living a programmed existence of compulsion. I guess, you know, I said, you know, consumption, reproduction, cannibalism, no, I said, parasitism. Wait, C-R-A-P, right? Consumption, reproduction, addiction, okay, and it's, you know, and parasitism, yeah, that crap. So, you know, and that's what life is made out of. But yes, I mean, it's probably the better word than addiction is probably compulsion, you know, and that's what we're driven by, is these vaguely sourced notions of I must, you know, I need to get that, I need to, you know, accomplish this or do that or have this or have that. And if I can do that or these things, you know, then everything will be just fine. And the catch is that everything's never just fine. You know, you get things and you find out, oh, shit, didn't work out. I have a, you know, behind my computer monitor, I have like a big... It's not a big screen TV. Well, maybe it's 30 inches across or something. Big. It's a big, it's a, you know, it's a TV. You know, that I got in garbage. And, but I, you know, it was nice using it, you know, as a computer screen until I got the electric bill. And I said, oh, fuck, this thing isn't, you know, I mean, it's LEDs and it's all this and that, but yeah, you really are paying for it. You know, it made a difference, you know, in the a noticeable difference in the electric bill. And you're saying, is it worth $20 a month or, you know, whatever, $15 a month? And I'm like, nah, I don't think so. You know, so I went back to the small monitor. So it's funny that, you know, you think you'd, you know, oh, it'd be nice if I had this. And I, you know, and you get it, and it's just, a, you know, it really doesn't solve the problem of providing you with any kind of security for the future, for tomorrow. It doesn't give you any protection against disease and death. It doesn't, just doesn't work. And there's so many examples, there's so many little stories, you know, of people who, you know, strived to get somewhere, and they get there, and, you know, they get their cancer diagnosis the day after. Even that the guy who invented the blue LED, I think he's dead. So he had a few years to, you know, wallow in the glory of being a contributor, and he started his own company, and he had some fun, I guess, doing all that stuff. But, I mean, he didn't get much out of it. And there's, you know, stories a lot more tragic than this, you know, where people never get their moment in the sun. They never get a day at the beach. You know, their life is just a chore and a drudgery. You know, just a constant harassment that they have to overcome. And, you know, they're just never going to breathe clean air again, kind of thing. You know, outside of those blights and miseries and, you know, chronic burden. And, you know, I've had that a few times with my bad back, you know, where it lingered, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks. And you worry, you know, is it just, this is going to be the rest of my life? I'm never going to be free of it, you know? And, yeah, it's not a good thing. That's the problem is that the conversation isn't with people who have any, they're not vulnerable to fear. you know, fear doesn't work, which it really should work on everybody. I mean, everybody should be pretty controllable by fear. And there's just so many people who just don't consider it. And it's not because they're necessarily dumb. You know, because I've known some smart people that, yeah, they sort of, you know, they got through their life without much grief because they didn't waste any time. And it is a waste of time. But it's hard to psychologically unknow your vulnerability. It's hard to, you know, when you know the truth of it, you know, that you're, your house is riding on this roll of the dice kind of thing. It's hard not to be triggered by that into some amount of emotional crisis, concern, you know, that, you know, you're going to, something bad is coming. So, you know, that's part of this, I guess, is, you know, it's hard to get people interested because they are so impervious to really, you know, getting a hold of the idea that their vulnerability is real. I mean, certainly as a kid, you know, you thought 30 years is a forever. You know, time just seemed to move so much slower, you know, back then. And, you know, and, you know, just that perspective was so wrong, you know, because you see how fast you all of a sudden you are 30, and all of a sudden you're 40 and 50. And, I mean, it just zooms right through your fingers, this opportunity that you have to do something with your life. And then you're in this boat that really is such a, you know, it's such a uglier, dirtier, you know, it's struggling for words today. I'm just trying to get to the idea, you know, you get older and the boat ride gets shittier. You know, when you're a kid, when you're young, you feel like it's all stainless steel, you know, that you have all of this immunity and you're impervious, you know, and and then all you are is it's, when you see the real boat, you know, as you're getting older, you can see that it's just balsa wood and that you could poke a hole in it, and it's just, you know, you're really, and the you can see the shark fins, and, you know, you really get, you know, where you are in terms of, you know, you were always in a shitty boat, and it's just, you know, your drives and desires allowed you to just not see any of it, in a way. Not see it viscerally, not feel it. Something like that, anyway. All right. Yeah, so anyway, so far, not a great start to this video, right? Because I just want to get to the point that this is not very challenging a contention to make. And it's, you know, I do, you know, now and then make these comparisons because I'm seeing this in the physics arguments with people who are supposed to be intelligent, you know, science lovers, and they're so myopic and so incapable of being fair to any arguments at all. They are really fanatic believers in some idea that what they've drawn as conclusions have some sort of merit, and they don't have any. They're just silly stories and fables they're living by. And so if you think you're something other than a more advanced stage of bug life, you know, that there's something more than just this physiology of consuming to reproduce, that it's really still just the story of a DNA molecule, and you know, we're a social bug, you know, so the bugs can you know, gain some sort of civilization, you could argue, almost like an ant colony, except they can do it with words and concepts, and they can have something called justice and fairness and notions of these things, and but they're still playing the same game. It's still a bug's life, and it can't be anything other than that. There's, you know, again, there's nothing to fix in the universe except us, except clean up the bug mess, clean up the mess made by the bugs. There's nothing else to do but, you know, prevent torture. That's the only mission. There's nothing else. There's no other job. Okay. There's no metaphorical telephone lines there's no cell towers to put up. There's no asphalt to pave. There's no food to put in packaging and deliver. There's no, you know, there's absolutely no other job necessary. The only one that exists, the only thing that exists that needs doing, is the prevention of unnecessary suffering. Suffering that can be mitigated efficiently. Now, you don't mitigate it efficiently by feeding one person, you know, 10 people or 10 pigs. You know, you don't mitigate it by just defining success as these matter and these don't matter. This torture matters, this torture doesn't matter. That's cheating. Okay. And so it's a real challenge, too. So it's not an easy job. You know, so you only have this one job, reduce, okay, what would have been the torture footprint. And that's it. That's the only way you can succeed at life. I mean, if you don't pay any attention to that and you end up just making it a more painful place, creating more opportunity and potential for something to go through, you know, traumatically unpleasant sensual experience. If that's what you're selling or creating, producing, then you suck. It's the category you're being in. You're going to be in. There's no other. You can't evade it. And so, what else is there? Is there some reasonable argument that there's something else to be done? You know, that there's some point in going to Mars or something, you know, and watching TV in a small little box. Is there some reason to do that? You know, and have a little whatever porty potty or whatever you're going to do. You know, is there some reason to do any of that crap? I mean, if you think about it, is there really some good reason? No. Like, was there any good reason for human beings to go into that little submarine and go, you know? No. The cameras can take better pictures than the people can see out the, you know, little tiny windows. What's the point? I don't even know if it had any window, you know. But, I mean, there's just no point. Why just stay on the boat and watch the video? Because you're probably just going to watch the video while you're in the little box. It's these kind of things where you just say, what are people thinking? I say it anyway. Yeah, because, yeah, I don't understand. I don't get it. It's so stupid. But anyway, it's not the point. I mean, yeah. So they have some word for me, uninteresting, boring, whiny, whatever it is, to dismiss it and walk away and say any of that idea that my life is futile and that all I can do is not be a worse menace. Oh, that's the best you can do is not fail spectacularly, only fail, you know, this much instead of this much, and that there is real no win to be had. It's always going to be a sad story, and all you're trying to do is make it less sad. Yeah, and that's no fun. So I understand why it's hard to sell it, but I should be doing better than I am at it, because it is just such, it's just, look, there's no God, there's no, you know, all this religious crap is so ridiculously silly, and, you know, all of this trying to glorify the human organism, you know, especially when you look at how crass and grotesque, dirty, you know, rat-infested its civilizations are. How can you really be proud of anything? You. All right, back. So I was thinking, yeah, do that now and then, about the fact that, so this, you know, just I heard somewhere about South Korea, it's got this very low birth rate down to 0.71 or something, you know, way below the 2.1 kids needed replacement population. And so it seems clear that, you know, as soon as people get a life, they do recognize that having kids will be expensive and it's going to detract from their life and it's not going to be all that. And might be better just to get a cat or some other way to, you know, create the necessary caregiver impulse or whatever. Their need for friends, okay, something, I don't know. I don't know. It's hard for me to talk about it because, yeah, I don't get most of it. You know, beyond it becoming a huge, you know, chore and distraction. Loving something or caring for something. It just means you have to go out in the snow and feed it or something, you know, it's work. And I, you know, I'm just, you know, obviously there is that, the rewardingness of the moments you get, of, I don't know what, you know, some sort of communion with some other feeling, thinking, experiencing thing, and finding each other's company pleasant, you know, or something. I mean, I enjoyed going outside and taking a walk with the cat, and you know, that kind of stuff. So I do understand it. I'm just trying to say that, you know, clearly your life is less complicated if you don't have, the burden of things depending on you to provide, you know, for their needs and comfort. Less stress in your life without it. But anyway, so the point is that there's lots of people in the more civilized people get, the more it's a tricky word, because I wouldn't call something like New York City civilized, but the more intelligent fact people become, the less controlled they are by the crude behavior of, you know, having kids when you're 15. That kind of crap just doesn't happen. And so the accidents, I guess, is the argument, aren't as regular. And so I think, and that's the reason that birth rates go down. And so it's only, you know, the more bug-like segment of human of the humans who are producing the future blight. Because if it was up to the ones who are educated, humans would go extinct. It's just a fact. Because they would all presumably have the same perspective into the future, and they would all be choosing, not to have kids. And you know, especially if there wasn't any government subsidies and all the other shenanigans to encourage people to be idiots, reckless and stupid. All the infrastructure that cleans up the mistakes, well, it doesn't clean them up very well. You know, obviously there's a lot of horror in the whole orphan. how it's dealt with, the whole foster life doesn't necessarily do a lot of people a lot of good. What's the point? The point is that, it doesn't, the argument doesn't need to be made, because people are drawing the conclusion whether they admit they're believers in it or not. So there's plenty of people not having kids, and they're still saying they're pro-life, but they're not going to play their role in creating it. And so they're perfectly comfortable with somebody else doing it, I guess. And they're hoping that somebody else will do it for some reason. So it's almost like, okay, so on the bright side, people don't have to believe to end up at the very future I want them to go to on purpose. They're going to go there accidentally. And, but they're not going to, as long as we maintain a population on the planet who's still that other kind of bug, the cruder, dumber bug. Because they'll more than compensate for the 90% who are doing life more responsibly. Their 10% of the irresponsible will create more than enough mess to perpetuate the bullshit into the future. It's an unknown whether, they predict that at some point this population growth is going to end, and there'll be a point where all of the human race is choosing slow and gradual extinction. That was the conclusion they drew, that the best their civilization could argue or produce would be that as an end conclusion. So that the bright side is I can fail and we still win. But I just don't like failing. I don't like that it's not for the right reasons. We should gracefully exit, and you're not going to be able to do it gracefully, okay, unless you do it on purpose and, understand that you're doing it and put in place the mechanisms to make that graceful transition from, feeding the machine to, I'm having a bad day, but there's no excuse that I have no vocabulary. I'm trying to think of the word you use when you're going to take a machine offline. that's what we're supposed to do, is just take it offline. Eventually. Just turn the knob until it's off. And like I said, you don't even have to know it's happening. It's so graceful. And, that's the hope. All right. So where else do I... the animal thing is, still the big subject. Because eventually there has to be some heroic action to save all the animals from being manipulated by a DNA molecule, to break them free of their slavery. To basically invade the South and free the slaves. There's going to have to be a point where human beings take their responsibility seriously and do the right thing. There's nothing pleasant about it. It's not going to be fun, but it's going to be necessary. I mean, there's all of this you got to pay for, it's just people who think somehow there's some free lunch idea. There's some philosophy that produces some, guaranteed productive outcome with no sacrifice, no pain, no work. And, it don't work that way. All right. Try again. See what happens. All right. So just thinking about the future and what it could possibly, how this all evolves into the future. Because you could sort of argue that, there's a huge distinction between being the primitive human, stomping around all day in a rice paddy or something, and the cell phone human, the apps and whatnot. And it's hard to imagine that you could, give the rice paddy stomper a cell phone, and they could go back to stomping in the rice paddy. So, once a human's exposed to all the adventuring, they can do synthetically, they're going to find bug life, in the natural life, rather brutal and harsh and uncomfortable. It's all those little conveniences, those little things, that add up to something. In the end, as much as they're silly, soap dispenser, a little electric soap dispenser, or some kind of these little things that, become... Oh, that's it. Not everybody doesn't have one of those, that kind of thing. Like going back to a bar of soap, what? Ew. Ew. People wash their hands that way? Ew. So I'm just saying, it doesn't seem like it's plausible that the future would contain bugs in both worlds, that it is getting more and more to be one world full of a bunch of humans. And, you know, that this idea of a nationality and a origin and a, you know, distinctions, you know, are in some ways becoming less relevant. Now, obviously, there's a lot of people trying to be distinct, you know, so they're doing lots of, you know, purple hair and whatnot. But it's all kind of irrelevant stuff. It doesn't have much to do with any kind of any notion that there's any real necessary conflict, okay, between cultures, because eventually they're all going to be aware of each other and have knowledge of each other, and you know, what one has, the other one's going to want, kind of thing. So anyway, I don't see it as being a world of rulers and moronic minions being controlled by the rulers. Now, the money, you know, is certainly a problem, but it seems eventually that's going to crumble and crash. And how all that's handled is going to, you know, be really important, you know. But it can't really stop the progress. I mean, you can't put all this stuff back in the box, and it's never going to be, there's never going to be a world where there aren't laser beams, and, you know, where there isn't, you know, you can't go all the way back. And you can't even go very far back, I guess, is sort of the argument. So, I mean, you can't put any of the knowledge back in the, you know, ignorant box. I suppose, yeah, no, it's still hard to imagine that, you know, even if one part of the world crashed, another part won't, you know. And, you know, so it's still going to be able to, you know, produce the products and deliver them to the humans that need them or want them badly enough. Anyway, so yeah, so it's I think in that sense some of this archaic crap does have to eventually die. I mean, I don't think, I mean, religion is clinging. I mean, it's you know, it's holding on, but it's holding on in a meeker and milder form. In a lot of people, the vast majority, and the fanatics are out there, you know, beating each other to death with sticks. But yeah, it's hard to say where that one goes. Whether they'll ever let go of their religious identity. You know, they'll ever just decide not to be sneeches with any kind of tattoo on their belly. Well, anyway, you know, who knows? That's an open question, I guess. But, you know, the idea is that, yeah, people are going to become more and more interested with the augmented. It's not really transhumanism, but it's transnaturalism. So we're separating ourselves from a natural life and living more and more a life, you know, manufactured by you know, our technology. And I mean, some of that has got to be revealing to people. I mean, even if they could imagine making an AI robot, and then clearly, you know, it can synthesize the behavior of a human. And what if they could install in it, okay, a capacity to feel and to be threatened? And would we watch the AI throw logic away to be a human, to do, I mean, I've pointed this out before, as much as I am a believer, okay, in fairness and deserve and all that kind of stuff, there's just, I don't think there's much doubt that I would not pass, if you tested me and I had some way to make, like, say there was, like, some real thing, cancer, I could deflect it somewhere else, okay, with some sort of, it could look like I'm doing the right thing, but I really didn't do the right thing because I knew the outcome was going to be, I don't have to have the cancer, somebody else has to have it. That there's not some, part of me that's just going to, let's try to steer it somewhere else. Somehow it's better over there than it is here. And just even recognizing those corruptions, that could still exist in somebody, even though, they've spent decades of their life, trying to recognize all of these hypocrisies and duplicities and not be controlled by them. And, when push comes to shove, I'm still controllable. I'm still an animal. I can't separate myself from the cowardly, fearful ape, that's going to panic and cheat. And I'm just assuming that other people have some dissidence, some conflict inside of themselves about whether or not they really are, an honorable person. I think we all might argue that, the painting in the closet, the real portrait of you, ain't as good as the one you've manufactured for presentation purposes. Lots of good stories, right? Story of Dorian Gray, right? The portrait of Dorian Gray. Could be told better. I mean, it's a little bit too psychotic. Be better if they made it into a, just being a regular human and just the idea of all the little cheats, where, you manufacture somebody else's failure to make yourself look better, that kind of crap. I mean, all the little things we do, the little murders. You don't have to commit grotesque ones to be a pretty hideous monster. It's just all the little, the little usuries that, we're all guilty of or capable of. And, just it's part of our reality. I think, I haven't met people that are really above it. Let me just put it that way. I don't know. There's not too many people that, personally I can recognize and say, gee, what a great human being. He's really doing being human really, really well. I just, I wish I could, but I can't name any names. I'm admitting, I don't pass either. I'm not going to say I'm not doing better than most. Just saying. Still not good enough, and that's really tragic that we're so driven by the mechanism, the DNA construction, the archaic, crude origins, we still can't be truly intelligent. Something like that. All right, back. So I was just thinking that, I'm an acquired taste, right? There's just this small number of people who find this content compelling or interesting, even, you know, enough to even start playing the video, let alone watch the whole video, pay any attention, really, to find it worth saying, what's he going to say next? You know, is it going to be a good bit? Something like that. Yeah, you know, so I think, you know, I find listening to me tolerable, even though I know what I'm going to say. So I don't think I'm doing something profoundly wrong, but it clearly doesn't work. Okay, it's for average people. I mean, there's more people, you know, who own a fuck you in the butt machine, you know, than have any interest in watching these videos, and that's, you know, depressing. But anyway, or even engaging in the conversation in some kind of, you know, I'd argue, relevant way, you know, where you actually engage the argument, okay, which is, this is just evolution. It's just chemistry, frankly. You know, just physics. There's nothing else. There's no other controlling mechanism, but really simple dynamics, rules. And we're just the byproduct of, you know, a universe that has crap in it that makes things like a Pluto. You know, a Pluto is just, it could make a Pluto, or it could make something, a Fudo, or a Nudo, or a, you know, whatever. It doesn't, you know, and human is just another one of these. It could happen, and it did. Okay, now I'd argue it's pretty improbable and all that kind of crap. But once you understand evolution and the mechanism, you know, something would happen. Whether it stops it to sponges or not, it could have gone a lot of different ways. There's a lot you could put in or take out of the recipe of cause and effect, and, you know, the outcome is dramatically different. You know, just like whatever conversations human beings have, you know, they could have different conversations, they could say different things, and it would be a different world. I mean, you could just be, it's just interesting to know. It'd be really great to be, as stated, it'd be really great if we could model more perfectly and we could actually see what the world would be, you know, without Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream thing. What if that never happened? you know, how much longer, how much whatever. What if somebody assassinated Hitler? You know, would the outcome been better or worse? It's an open question. You know, because you don't know. You don't know how many bad things were necessary for something good to happen. You know, it sucks that that's true, but it just is. Anyway. Yeah, so so it's just this tiny minority of humans that are compelled to you know, do it on purpose, recognize that life should be on purpose, and that, you know, we should do the best we can to get a right answer and to draw and create correct answers to problems. And the dilemma of evolution, you know, the creation of monstrosities, even though beautiful, they're hideously underperforming, you know, as in terms of efficiency. Way too many slaves, way too much abuse, way too much usury, way too much exploitation, way too many things sacrificed. Vampires. I mean, we're all a kind of vampire. And there's worse versions and better versions. But that's all there are vampires. And it's unsustainable. Yeah, so something like that. All right, so finishing up. So, yeah, when I started doing this, there was lots of subjects, you know, because I think, you know, we're not going to exit immediately. And so while we're here, it would be better to enhance the, you know, our civilization. And so there's lots of ideas I consider brilliantly superior to, you know, the present format. You know, the if you were to compare ideas to technology, you know, there's outhouses, and then there's, you know, porcelain, and you know, there's a huge difference between the best we could do and the least we could do in terms of manufacturing a system. Okay, let's put it that way. And you know, so I fought for things like, you know, the instant runoff voting, but more importantly, getting rid of the geographic bias in elections and really creating a one-man, one-vote kind of system instead of the silly corruptions of 250-year-old bribes that, you know, we somehow can't step over or past now. And you'd think the people in Alaska would have the integrity to concede their vote shouldn't be 20 times more powerful than somebody living in California. You know, it just shouldn't be. So little things you could do to fix the democracy, make it more representative, that is, not generically the same sellout, compromise, bullshit candidates, and instead have the real right and the real left and the real, you know, thoughtful, reasonable in between. and we don't have that because of the system forces the same majority to always win because the minorities aren't segregated in geographic districts. So it's, you know, it's a subtly complicated subject, but not very. And yeah, I could get no ground at all. So that didn't go anywhere. You know, arguing the right to die didn't go anywhere. You know, all the economic subjects, nowhere. You know, there was a lot of others. The school thing is so obvious. You know, pay kids to pass tests, especially now, because you don't have to have textbooks and you don't have to do all this crap. You know, it's so much more efficient now, and all the money is just wasted on this physical infrastructure, and it's so stagecoach. And what we really should do is pay the kids, you know, and we could do it for half the price. You know, pay a kid $50,000 for passing a GED. I'm telling you, they're going to pass it, and they're going to pass it a lot younger. They're going to take it a lot more seriously, schooling. They're going to take their education a lot more seriously if they know they got $50,000 coming to them as soon as they do it. You know, they get a gigantic down payment on a house. I can't even imagine how much more interested, okay, in acquiring knowledge I would have been if there was this huge payoff, you know, and that would be half the price, you know, half, cut your taxes in half, and get a far superior result. And yeah, so the teachers have to do something else. Yeah, so what? You know, no big deal. And especially now, it's already been proven. I mean, they're basically online now, giving it away for almost for free. So why bother? Why bother with the the institutions? You know, let them run nursery schools or some other thing, you know, where people can't raise their own kids and they have to hand it off to somebody else. but make that their problem, not society's problem. You know, so that would be another disincentive to have kids, is that, you know, if you're not going to take care of them, it's going to cost you to have somebody else do it for you. But anyway, but all those subjects, you know, you can't gain any traction with people. And they're just going to keep doing things the wrong way, the less efficient way, the stupid way. They like wallowing in their sewage, and there's not much you can do. Not much I can imagine doing. And again, the only thing that's redeeming is that their behavior's improving without them saying, I get it. So I suppose that's the only bright side. Yeah, you know, just there's so many subjects. I mean, all of this immigration thing could have been solved if we all had real Social Security numbers. All the voting fraud could be solved if we had real Social Security. I mean, why shouldn't this be a real thing? You have an identity, okay? You maintain it, okay, by maintaining, you know, updating the information as your life changes. You update this little bit of information about where you live, you know. What's the big deal? You know, that we all be accountable as present, you know, as being a person on Earth. You know, hardly horribly intrusive and, you know, incredibly powerful in terms of preventing all kinds of shenanigans and fraud. But, you know, there's too many people invested in the shenanigans and the fraud. There's too many people who want the unearned advantages, the corrupt advantages. So, well, anyway, I can only do my part, as I have said before, and so I'll, you know, make what arguments I can and state as. Unfortunately, it's, you know, so this, you know, how well I'm stating it is declining with age, I suppose. I mean, the clarity with which I see things is, you know, it's getting better and better. But my capacity to construct, part of it is that I've done it so many ways and so much that it's tedious, you know, to have to go over it and over it. So I do have to formalize it, I guess, is the, you know, formalize the process of making these different arguments that need to be made to the different people who have these blocks, you know, these obstructions to their being able to see the truth, made out of little fables they tell themselves to make their life more survivable or enjoyable. It's probably the better word to use. But anyway, I'm going to work on it. Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm constantly working on it. You know, I mean, I'm spending my whole existence trying to argue with people, pretty much. I mean, that's all I'm doing. You know, making arguments for now 2 decades. You know, it's shit. And it's really not any fun because it's so unrewarding. But, you know, I got it better than most. So I can't complain. Most animals, anyway. Anyway, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. And, I'll try again and whatnot. So that's the end of the video. Yeah. See you next time and such. All right, this is all I got. Have a nice day. Do what you can. Don't be an asshole.